I'm caught in love's web so deceitful. None of my endeavors turn fruitful. I knew not when I rode the high-blooded stead. The harder I pulled its rein, the less it would head. Love is an ocean with such a vast space. No wise man can swim it in any place. A true lover should be faithful till the end and face life's reprobated trend. When you see things hideous, fancy them neat. Eat poison, but taste sugar sweet. That was Love by Rabia Balkhi, originally a Persian poem translated into English. Rabia Balkhi is one of the most popular poetess of Afghanistan. She is possibly the first woman poet in the history of modern Persian poetry. Also, the first woman of her time to write love poetry in Persian. A poem about love, written by a woman from the land of Afghanistan. Sounding like a paradox? Seems so unbelievable, right? So not what you think, how you see Afghanistan today. But it is true and is also very much a reality. Everyone, this is Shilpa and welcome to a brand new episode of O Folk. I published my first episode on 14th of August, just one day before India's independence. Last four stories were from India, as I wanted to celebrate India's independence through her diversity, introducing the world to the true colors of India. But something else also happened this year on August 15th. While my country was celebrating independence, another country, not so far away from India, was losing hers, Afghanistan. We all know what happened. We all have seen on news channels, social media, heard from people, talked and discussed for many, many hours. Like millions of other people across the world, I was disturbed. I am disturbed by what is happening there. I am worried for the people, especially women and children. I am devastated and scared by seeing the graphic images and videos. And they are not just videos. They're real people. And those are their stories of unimaginable suffering. Growing up in India, we always knew about the trade routes between Afghanistan and India. Dry fruits, some spices, carpets, all these things used to come from there. And how can I forget about the Kabuliwalas or the Afghani merchants from Kabul staying in India, especially Calcutta? I am from eastern part of India. I'm a Bengali, born and brought up in Calcutta, and I have grown up knowing Kabuliwalas as an integral part of my home city. In 1892, India's first Nobel laureate, Rabindranath Tagore, wrote this iconic short story, Kabuliwala. It was the tale about this fruit seller from Kabul, Afghanistan, living in Calcutta. While living there and selling dry fruits, he developed a doting, loving, filial affection and an unusual bond with this little 5-year-old girl, Minnie, from a middle-class aristocratic Bengali family. Today, I'm thousands of miles away from India. I try to visit every year, but obviously, because of COVID, I haven't been able to go for the past 2 years now. But I miss my home, the smell of my room, familiar aroma of my mom's cooking, known lanes of my city. I miss everything. But I still know I can go there again, sometime very soon. But now, when I think of these innocent Afghani people and the way they had to leave their country, their home, their everything, with almost nothing with them, no hope of when they can visit again or if ever they can visit again, my heart cries. Few days back, I was reading this news article and I read about Kabuliwalas in Calcutta praying for their families back in Kabul and trying to rescue them safely from there. All I could do was close my eyes and say a little prayer for them. I'm not a powerful or a resourceful person. I can't do much, but the least I can do is to tell my listeners that the Afghanistan you see today is not the country that it used to be. Afghanistan has a very rich history dating back thousands of years that reflects in their literature, language, food, architecture, everything. It was a land of colors in every sense. And the religious extremism that we see today, the human rights violation, the oppression on women, is also not what Afghanistan stands for. While many might be very surprised to know this, but Afghanistan was a land of diversity, with people from various cultures and religious backgrounds coexisting and living peacefully for hundreds, even thousands of years. So for today's episode, I have handpicked one such very special story, a Jewish folktale from the land of Afghanistan. Jews in Afghanistan sounds not very familiar or relatable maybe, and pretty out of how we imagine Afghanistan as a country, but many might don't know that Jews in Afghanistan have a very old history. Until the assassination of King Nader Shah in 1933, the country had a significant number of Jew population for more than 1,000 years. Key Afghan cities such as Herat and Kabul were once homes for thousands of Jew families for generations. Many of them traded in leather and karakul, which is sheep pelt, and often traveled long distance between Afghanistan, Iran, India, and Central Asia. In the mid-1900s, Afghanistan had a strong number of nearly 40,000 strong Jewish community. The vast majority of Jewish population left Afghanistan in the 1960s. Most went to Israel, while some went to Europe, and some came here in this country to New York. The only and last remaining Jew living in Afghanistan, Zablan Simintov, left the country earlier this month on 7th of September. He is an Afghan Jewish carpet trader and a restaurant owner. Before his evacuation, he was also the caretaker of the only and the last remaining synagogue located in the capital city of Kabul. Today's episode is to celebrate the Afghani Jews. Today's episode is to celebrate the real Afghanistan. You're listening to O Folk with me, Shilpa Das Gupta. An exclusive podcast where we walk together down the folk trail with folk tales and vibrant culture stories from across the globe with the magic of storytelling. So one day, on a summer night in Afghanistan, the king decided to change out of his fancy robe and left his palace, dressed like a peasant, just to take a stroll around and get some evening air. Now, besides that, he also wanted to see what is going on around. He walked through the market and the locality, and finally he reached to the poorest section, which was almost towards the end of the town. To his surprise, he suddenly heard joyful, happy singing from this dimly lit little cottage. Of course, he didn't expect something like that coming out of that little cottage, so he peeped through the window to see what is happening inside. He saw a poor man sitting at his table. The man was eating and singing and smiling and thanking God for whatever he has on his table. The king was so surprised to see such a poor man, but in such high spirits. He couldn't hold his curiosity and excitement, so he requested if he can come inside as a guest. The poor man agreed and he happily called the king inside. He also offered him food and drink. After having dinner, the king asked the man how he manages his living. The man said, "Oh, I'm a very poor Jew. I just go around the city and try to fix shoes. And that way, whatever little I earn is enough for me to get a day's food. And that's it. I'm happy. The king was astonished. He asked, "But what will you do when you're too old to work?"
"Oh, I don't have to worry about that," the man said.
"God is there to take care of me. I'm God's child. He will definitely find some way out for me so that I can earn my living and a day's food." The king was a bit perplexed. He returned to his palace and took off his peasant disguise. He was not 100% convinced with what the man said, so he decided to test the faith of the man. The next day, the king announced that no one is allowed in the city to fix shoes in exchange of money. That morning, when the poor Jew went to work, he was surprised to learn about this new rule the king has just started. And obviously, he was worried. What will he do now? He looked up towards the sky in despair and prayed to God. In his mind, he knew that God will definitely help him in some way. As he was thinking all this, he looked around and suddenly he saw some people carrying drinking water. And he decided, "Yes, that's something I can do. I can carry water to people's houses." So yes, the poor man got some work for the day. He carried water to and from the town well and sold it to people. He did this for the rest of the day. And that way he earned just enough to buy food for that day. The king was really looking forward for that evening to see what the poor man did. Again that evening, he dressed up as a peasant and walked straight towards the poor man's house. And like the previous day, he was again surprised to find that the man was happy and singing and enjoying his dinner. Surprised, the king asked, "How are you? I heard about the king's law this morning and I was thinking about you, so I had to come and see what you're doing." The man happily answered, "Oh, I don't have to worry. As I told you, God is taking care of me. He did not abandon me." The king closed one door, God opened another. "So I did not fix shoes, but I sold water and earned enough for today." The king left again. The next morning, he brought out another rule that no one can carry water or sell water against money. The poor man was out for his day's work and obviously when he found out that here is the new rule, he was surprised and also distressed what he's going to do today to earn money. He looked around confused and sad. Suddenly, he saw these few men were going into the forest to cut trees to sell firewood. So he decided to follow them, cut some trees and sell firewood. And that was it. He earned just enough money for that day. The king's evening ritual also continued that day. So he was again peasant for that evening, walked to the poor man's house and tried to learn his whereabouts. Again surprised to see that he was happy and excited, enjoying his dinner. Once again, he asked how it became possible. The man explained what happened that day and how he earned his money. The next day, again, the king issued a new command, asked his soldiers to stop the woodcutters coming from the forest and bring all of them to palace. He dressed these woodcutters as guards and gave them swords. He told all of them that from now on they have to work for the king and they will only be paid at the end of the month. The poor man was perplexed. He had no money for this evening. How is he going to survive for a month? But he still trusted God. So he prayed and also tried to find a way out of the situation. While on his way home from the palace, he was looking at the sword and suddenly he had this clever idea. He thought, why not exchange the metal sword with a wooden one? That way he can sell the metal one, have enough money to survive him for a month, and also he can continue with his work at the palace. And at the end of the month, when he get paid, he can buy back the metal sword. The king was very happy that day. He thought to himself that this time he has trapped the poor man.
So to see the successful outcome of his plan, he disguised again and went to the poor man's house. And to much of his surprise, he saw the man singing and dancing, happy and enjoying his dinner as usual. Surprised, the king asked him what has happened. The poor man narrated him the entire story. "But what will you do if the king finds out?" the king asked. "Oh, I have no worry about such things," the man said. "I have God by my side. I'm sure he will help me find out some way to survive the king if he finds out." The next day, the king ordered all the newly appointed woodcutter-turned-guards to report to the center of the city, where a man was being executed for stealing from the royal palace. So all the guards came, including the poor man, and the entire city also came together to see what is happening. The king suddenly ordered the poor man to come to the center and cut the thief's head. The poor man prayed and cried really hard, asked the king to not make him do this. He said, "I have never killed a mosquito. How can I kill a man?" But it was the order of the king, so he must obey. Suddenly, he requested for a few minutes to pray to God. Once he was done praying, he stood up, came to the center, and cried out loud, "God, you know I have never killed anyone. I have done no sin in life. If you think this man is guilty, let my sword be so sharp as to kill him in single blow. But if he's not guilty, let my sword turn to wood as a symbol of his innocence." Suddenly, there was this suspense all around. With all eyes on him, the man reached out for his sword. He pulled it out and held it high. The crowd gasped, then clapped, then cheered, and then started shouting out of excitement. They saw a wooden sword. The man was not guilty, and they thought a miracle just happened in front of their eyes. The king just laughed to himself. He was so delighted to see the wisdom of this poor Jew. He called him close and he confessed to him that it was him who was visiting his house every evening. "I am so impressed with your faith in God and with your wisdom," the king said. "And from now on, you will come and stay with me at my palace and be my chief advisor. I have so much to learn from you," the king said. And so the poor Jew went to live in the palace with the king. And from then on, every evening, both of them would be singing and enjoying life. Moral of the story is, if you have wisdom, if you have the right positive spirit, and if you face any situation in life with a smile, you can conquer anything. No problem is big enough to overshadow you, so keep smiling. And on that note, I will take you to the folk fact of this episode. You're listening to O Folk with me, Shilpa, and it's time for this episode's folk fact. As I mentioned earlier that in today's episode, we are celebrating the real diversity of Afghanistan. We are celebrating the Afghani Jews. So today's folk fact is something really, really fascinating about them as well. So as we all know, synagogues are auspicious houses of worship for the Jewish community. In the city of Old Herat in western Afghanistan, there used to be four synagogues, one public ritual bath or mikvah, as well as a Jewish cemetery. At one point, this area of Herat was known as Mohallaye Messiah, or the neighborhood of the Jews. The UO synagogue, the largest of them all, still exists in Herat. Not very long ago, it underwent renovation and was added to Herod's list of protected cultural sites. It is the only synagogue in Herod that has been preserved with most of its original features. With that, this episode comes to an end. Tell these stories. Try to know more about diverse cultures from across the globe. Power, money, authority, gun shells might take over countries, but let the beautiful history, these mesmerizing culture stories, live on through us. Let's tell the stories more. Let's embrace all religions and cultures with open arms. Let's not turn our heads away because who knows, this might knock on our doors someday. Thank you for being my partner in this fascinating journey. Continue listening to O Folk, and please, please share with everyone around you and spread the word. Honestly speaking, I cannot reach out to the world without your support and help. Please follow and subscribe O Folk on any podcast platform of your preference. As you might know already, it's on all major podcast platforms like Google Podcast, Apple Podcast, Spotify, Amazon Music, iHeartRadio, and so many more. My friends in India, you can also hear me on JioSaavn. And if you're listening to me on Apple Podcast, I would be immensely grateful if you leave me a review. That will tell me how you're feeling, what you want me to improve, and so much more. Join me on social media platforms. O Folk is on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. I'll be back with another fascinating story on October 6th, so stay with me on this journey. And wrapping up on that note, take care, spread love, be loved. Goodbye, and love you all.